Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is not sure how he's going to get home tonight, as it is cold, apparently, and that is enough to stop trains working. It's Richard Herring! Yo, 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 thank you very much! Yo! Yo! Welcome, I'm pretty cool, I say yo. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was playing Hungry Hippos the other day. That's not the cool bit. That's not cool. I was playing it with the bloke and the woman from off of the Mastermind box. Yeah. They're pretty cool, and they call it Rahalastapa, so I don't know if that's going to catch on. I'd just like to apologise to... Because I don't know if you can see. I've got like a big spot on my nose. Can you see it? Yeah, so I know Mackenzie couldn't see it backstage either, but it's a bit, my nose is really sore, but it feels like I'm turning into like either an alcoholic or the Santa Claus. It's just starting to go. It could be. I think it's just an infection. But you know, if it was a proper TV show, they'd cover that up and probably not draw attention to it. So I've got my game from... Oh, I did a gig. I've been gigging. I do my tour, richchain.com/gigs. Ofrigan 50. This game features in this. We're going to do a Kickstarter for the DVD of Ofrigan 50, and this is one of the things you can get. We're going to slightly customise a few of these. It features in the show. It's called Penguin Race, and which is a misnomer because this is a single track game. There's no overtaking involved in this at all.
That's what it was.
There we go. Whee! There we go. It's a lot of fun. It's nice, isn't it? Tonight I might just, the podcast might just be this. My daughter has one of these, but she doesn't play with it properly. She stops it after the second time it's gone round and starts playing with the penguins individually. I'm going, play with it properly. I had to buy my own one because she doesn't play with it this properly. But in Cardiff, I did this routine about this game, and it goes on quite a long time. But I realised when I got to the very end of the show is a callback to this game.
And it's quite an unusual line. The final line of the show, spoilers, is, don't worry, it's all a comedy contest. But I hadn't done the bit of the routine that was about. So everyone in Cardiff just went, one bloke went, ha! And everyone else went, what? It's been a really good show. So I thought I'd just explain to the people in Cardiff what they missed. If you are going to come and see the show, don't come and see it. So do come and see it. That was bad marketing right there. Don't just fast forward through this bit, as you do anyway. There's someone who's put the time that the interview starts on underneath. It's difficult to understand what this game is, right? It's a weird concept, but it explains on the game what it is. It says it here. It says the small penguin of a group of likability. That's what's going on there. It's the small penguin of a group of likability. It barely needed saying it. It's the small penguin of a group of likability. There's three penguins in it. They're all quite annoying, and they're all the same size. I don't know what's... And it's like these. It's a Chinese game, right? I think someone's clearly gone. Should we get someone in English to come and help us translate what we're going to write on this packaging? Nah, mate. English and Chinese are basically the same language. Let's just take a run at it ourselves. I've got a Chinese English dictionary. What I want to say is a small group of likable penguins. Small penguin of a group of likability. That's that's arrogant. But the guy on the other side, slightly preempted this, has got it down to three words. What this game is, it's the comedy contest. That's what's going on there. The comedy contest. COMITY, the comedy contest. That's what's... It's the comedy contest. That guy, he's gone, no, I don't speak English, but I don't need the dictionary. I'm going to have a run at this myself. I'm pretty sure there's an English phrase, the comedy contest. I'm pretty sure that's... Let's just, now I don't need to check it, just put that. I've been laughing at that guy for quite a long time. Comedy contest. Is it the comedy contest, the community contest, the vomity contest? But you're all laughing at me because comedy, of course, is a word, as you know. Comedy is the judicial decisions made by one court that have an effect on the judicial decisions of another court. So that's the comedy contest. It's the comedy contest there. Good. So that, if you were in Cardiff, that's more or less what you missed. If come see you elsewhere, I will do that. So look, we're going to crack straight on. My guest this week, he's probably best known as the man from The Man Who Fell in Love with a Traffic Cone. That is why we're here tonight. Will you please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Mackenzie Crook? Welcome. Sit down.
Oh. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming along. If we get bored, you can play with the penguin race game later on.
Contest, yes.
It's nice. It's the comedy contest, Rooning Go. What was it was one of your first roles, of course. It's hard to live up to The Man Who Fell in Love with the Traffic Cone, because that was the first thing you did.
It was, yeah.
What happened in The Man Who Fell in Love with the Traffic Cone?
I remember cringing all the way through production. And you know, I've cringed every time I thought of it since, really. And that's all I really remember. But it was... Yeah, a short film that I was sort of a Mr. Bean character. It doesn't get any funnier than the title.
Okay.
That's as much as you're going to get out of it. But guy who found a traffic cone and then started a romantic relationship with
it.
I think there was a scene in a bath. I was scrubbing its back. And,
Suddenly it's piqued my interest. Yes. It's on YouTube. It sounds like a Stuart Lee sketch. Stuart Lee had a sketch. One of the first sketches he wrote was about a man who falls in love with a chair.
Right.
But the joke is he's talking to like an empty chair. You assume there's someone on it,
That's a clever twist.
It's a chair
on this one. Right? Yeah. This was just as it sounded.
Yeah. I like it. That's good. That's it. That's all I had for you. So it's time to go home now. It's very good. I'm quite interested. There's quite a few autobiographical things about you and your life that I'm quite interested in beyond your career. Okay. That you, as a young man, you worked on a tobacco farm in Zimbabwe.
I didn't work on it. That was my uncle's tobacco farm, yeah. So just through this sort of twin thing of my dad worked for British Airways and my mum's brother had married a Rhodesian. So all my summer holidays, all my school holidays, I went and spent on this tobacco farm in Zimbabwe where all my, you know, mates were cycling around cul-de-sacs for the whole summer. So yeah.
You broadened your horizons.
Yeah.
Is that what got you into smoking and tobacco farms?
It possibly was, yeah. Yeah, I know my uncle grew for Benson and Hedges.
Did he?
Yeah, he was very proud.
Your parents It's like your parents caught you smoking and said, what we're going to do is send you to a tobacco farm. You have to eat all the tobacco until you...
You will learn how it's produced.
Oh, that's interesting. And you there's some jobs you've had. Before we get... We'll get on to some career stuff later. You've been worked for Pizza Hut?
Yeah, I had a long career. Well, yeah. 2-year career.
2 years?
Hut. Yeah, yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Was that concurrent with being doing early stand-up, or was that...
It sort of crossed over, I suppose, yeah. When I left school, I didn't... I tried to get into art college, couldn't get in, and just found myself a bit adrift, and I worked as a waiter for 2 years.
Did you?
Yeah.
I used to love Pizza Hut. I went again quite recently with my family, because then you have kids and you have to start going back to Pizza Hut.
I haven't been
now,
for years.
Because now I eat at Pizza Express.
Yeah, well, yeah. So
and,
do I.
And yeah, it's not a very nice pizza. They get free salad.
At Pizza Hut?
Yeah.
You still, yeah, yeah. But... Yeah,
would you
I
eat
used,
that?
I used to prepare that salad. Yeah.
Okay. And you worked at a chicken factory?
No. See, this...
That's on IMDb. That's a
I've read that a few times. I think that came from... I had a string of temping jobs. And because I had literally no skills, I was given catering jobs.
Okay.
And I worked in a hospital kitchen one time.
Yeah.
And I think I related to a story to some... It was...
Was it a hospital for chickens? That would be
it was
where
the most... It was
where the...
like a dungeon. It was horrible. This just gothic hospital kitchen. And there was these trays of chicken, like carcasses, all been, you know, just the remaining bits. And this guy was... This sort of monster of a guy was scraping these... tins into a garbage disposal unit, and every now and again he'd spot a juicy morsel and go ah! And this was my memory of this job, and I think that's where the chicken factory came from, but I wasn't even aware that chickens were manufactured.
That's why I was it could have been a rubber chicken factory. That would have been useful as a comedian. All the rubber, they must be made somewhere. So look, there's lots to talk to you about. I've been watching. I caught up quite late with Detectorists, and then watched it all in about 3 days.
Yes,
And it's absolutely amazing.
Thank you very much.
It's really so good and very moving and very funny. You were saying, we were about to talk about it backstage, but I said I imagined it would have been hard for you to get something like that onto telly, but you told me it was very easy.
Yeah, I said, sort of almost embarrassingly easy, because it's supposed to be a long, hard struggle to get something made, and I went in with this, yeah, what on paper doesn't, you know, read as a particularly great idea, this just a couple of guys whose passion is metal detecting, and you know, I was very specific about it wasn't going to be a gag every few seconds. It was going to be space for it to breathe. But to his credit, Shane Allen at the BBC totally understood where I was coming from, and nobody meddled. And so, sorry.
No, well, it's good, but that's good to see, because it gives you hope that can happen. And also that's, you know, if more executives just trusted their initial decision to go, we're going to give this guy a go at doing something.
Yeah.
I mean, what's lovely about it, I think, is the obvious comedy route to go that many people go for nerdy characters is, we're going to make them idiots and we're going to laugh at them.
Yes.
And there's a degree where, you know, they're eccentric in their hobbies, as anyone is, but you're very sympathetic to the characters rather than...
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was always... It was never meant to be a Mickey take of hobbyists. It was supposed to be an affectionate look at them, because, you know, I am a hobbyist and I've got loads of hobbies and collections and stuff, and I find that stuff fascinating. And I was sure that other people did as well.
Yeah. But you didn't do... You are doing metal detecting now, but you weren't when you came up with it.
No, I saw an episode of Time Team with a couple of these guys on, and they were odd blokes, really strange. Really, yeah, strange, secretive men. And it was a Time Team special. they'd got this site, this field, where they were turning up lots of good stuff. And so they made the film crew wear blindfolds. They wouldn't reveal where this... And I just sort of thought, yeah, this is good.
Because I did a bit of archaeology when I was a student, or just before I became a student, my year off. And there was... The detectorists were kind of the enemy, really, of the archaeologists in a big way, because they would come and...
Yeah.
You know, there was Nighthawks, they're called, which I think you might refer to. And you, which, but I like that in the show, there's the sort of... the evil metal detectorist played by Simon Farnaby is fantastic in, as Simon and Garfunkel, isn't it? Those two guys is fantastic. But they, and then, well, I don't want to give some spoilers, but they're...
Oh, these were all massive fans. They turn out...
It's lovely that you kind of sort of make friends in the end with them, because they're just bigger nerds than you, I suppose, and just an evil in a... in a way that is meaningless.
Barely.
So I was, but I've always had this desire, because when I was a kid, I always loved digging stuff up. But then, and I've always kind of wanted to have a metal detector when I was a kid, and then I kind of thought I could do it now, couldn't I?
Yeah.
I'm allowed now.
Absolutely. You've got a garden?
Yeah.
Start there.
Mm-hmm. Going to start there. What tip? I'm mainly just going to talk to you about metal detecting.
Sure. That's all right. I could
get a magazine, but it's a lot of hard work. What is the best metal detector to get?
Well, it depends how much you want to shell out there, Richard. Because
£20?
That's going to be a Power Rangers one, the 20 quid. No, for about 150, up to $5,000, you know.
How much did your one cost?
I've got my XP Deus is around about £1,000 mark.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's like you've gone in. It's like you've gone into a restaurant and chosen the third most expensive bottle of wine. But you own a wood as well, so you know you've got that's pretty cool. Do you go metal detecting in the wood?
I have been. I bought my first metal detector, Viking VK30.
Oh yeah.
Took it up the woods, and I literally just read through the instruction thing, put the batteries in, turned it on. The first signal I got was a Victorian silver sixpence.
Right.
It's as if somebody had planted it there to get me into the hobby. But honestly, yeah, so I've detected in my wood.
Yeah. That, I mean, it's nice to buy a wood.
Yes.
What do you do with the wood?
Just go there and...
You know there are just woods
look
lying around you can go and look in for free.
Yeah, but this is mine.
Do you have big fences up stopping people coming in, or are people allowed to go in?
No, people are allowed to come in. Yeah, I didn't want to start stopping people coming in. But it's quite an isolated 8 acres of woodland in Essex, and it's just... Because I grew up in suburbia, but just a short hop to the countryside. But now I live in London, and it was a sort of place to take my kids to... Hopefully nurture an appreciation of the natural world.
Yeah, and a place where presumably you're kind of encouraging nature to flourish.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a sort of conservation area.
Yeah. I like going... there's loads of woods near me now, and I like going and getting wood out of them and then burning it. Do you do that?
Do you fell trees?
I wait till things are falling down, because it seems rude to actually cut... It seems rude and a lot of work to cut them down. But I have got a little saw... that I take with me to cut things up into a more manageable amount.
Oh, good. Yeah. It's good to get. Apparently Mick Hucknall has got a forest, no less. And guess what it's called? The Forest of Hucknall. Apparently that's true.
You didn't... Have you named yours?
Crookswood.
Yeah. So look, you're in this TV show called The Office. Let's mention this. Mm-hmm. I always thought... I would quite like to see The Office slightly redone. Would you mind getting everyone together and start it again? I think you could do it. I think Tim and Dawn are horrible, and that Gareth's nice.
Ah, interesting.
And they're bullies, and I think you wouldn't have to change much to make Gareth the kind of hero of it and them the nasty people in it.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because they are quite mean to
they're very
Gareth.
Mean to
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim is very... Tim from The Office. Have you seen him in Black Panther? I mean, that is the most Tim from The Office in a... That is like someone's seen this and gone, let's put Tim from The Office in Black Panther. Won't he stick out? No, I think he'll be all right. I think he'll be all right. Make him put on an American accent. That's the thing. I think he's a very... He bullies Gareth, and Gareth's nice.
I don't know if Gareth's nice.
He is. He's just trying to do his job. If you just have to tweak it very slightly, it's like it's filmed from their point of view, and if it was filmed from his point of view, it would be a different programme. And I say a better but it would have been more successful if it'd been called Gareth's at the Office. Gareth in the Office.
Well, if only you were around at the time to have suggested it then. But
would you be prepared to get everyone together to film it just the same scripts, but I'll just...
I don't know if it's up to me to get everyone back together. I don't know. If I put out the call, hey guys, I've decided that we're doing the office again.
If I can get you on board, then I can ring the others up.
All right, okay. I'm on board. I'm on board.
And you had that haircut when you got married?
Yes. I mean, we just finished filming the first series, so yeah. I must have had, I don't know, tousled or you know something, but it, whatever I product I put on it, it all flopped down. So yeah, I'm very much Gareth in my wedding photos.
How was your wife about that? Was she okay with it?
It was the happiest day of her life.
Yeah. Because yeah. I saw you being interviewed between the two. So we were talking backstage about this. I saw you being interviewed by John Leslie.
Yes.
I didn't see him on TV so much, did you? Yes. Happened to him. And Fern Britton, who you don't see so much on TV, and you should. She's great. And hasn't done anything wrong, as far as I know. you're quite cool and indie, and Tim from The Office was beside you.
Was he being Tim from The Office?
He wasn't being Tim from The Office. That was the problem, really. Yeah. He was trying to be cool. if you'd finished filming, you could have cut it a bit, couldn't you, to be different? So it's like you wanted to be.
Now I'm saying it out loud, I'm wondering whether it's even true. I mean, it sounds like just a good story, but no, I mean, it was... yeah, I don't know. I should have put some tongs in it, perhaps.
It was quite a haircut.
Yeah.
And was that your interpretation?
I went to a hairdresser on Derby Street in Soho and said to the guy, I need a wanker's haircut. And he was really put out by it. I remember, I thought it would be really funny and quirky and it would make his day, but he was like, I've been to college, you know, I do good haircuts, not wankers. But, you know, to his credit, he dished me out a good wanker's haircut.
It's almost like, I'm going to show this guy. He's going to regret that for the rest of his life. Well, go back to The Detectorist, because what I think is the real beauty of it is the depth of all the characters. So given that you've written it and you've directed a lot of it...
Yeah, no.
You've shared it out very fairly, but what I really like is the peripheral characters in it. Like we were saying, Simon and Garfunkel, but even the smaller characters in the club. You know, there's these lovely things happening almost in the background sometimes.
And most of those parts were written for friends, people that I'd worked with before. So those sort of characters I wrote and came up with, thinking about all these people. Who do I want to get involved in this? Pierce is a great actor, so you know I could write the character of Russell for Pierce. So yeah, thank you. But that's what that was all about.
Yeah. Well, it's often not. You know, people don't go and weirdly, I think maybe the American Office did that as well. They really kind of went into those background characters in The Office, which you probably didn't have. There wasn't so much time to concentrate on. Yeah. But you know, if you create those characters, that actually you could pick out any of those characters in The Detectorist and do a whole episode about them at least. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully which you, so. You know, yeah.
It's that attention to detail, I suppose, which is why I guess why it won awards and stuff. That's why I'm guessing. So when you started out, you did stand up to begin with.
Yeah,
so after coming out of Pizza Hut, and you came to do characters. You did a teacher character.
Yes,
was based on an actual teacher in your school or teacher.
A bunch of them. Yeah, my one main one, but the character I did was called Mr. Bagshaw. Which was the name of another teacher that I had,
right.
Which was a really nice guy. And for some reason, I chose this nice guy's name to play this complete arsehole. And so I've always wondered why I did that.
He must be feeling dreadful.
No. I don't know what happened to Mr. Bagshaw. He was a lovely man. But yeah, so I did that character.
Yeah. And Charlie Cheese.
Charlie Cheese.
Which you did. Well, you were saying you did a big interview series with him, and wondered if you interviewed me because you had so many people you can't remember who you interviewed. Which I have the same problem. I think Tim from The Office has been on this, hasn't he? No, don't. well, someone from The Office has been on here. He went. Oh no. Didn't go that well. Charlie was Charlie Cheese was.
The old light entertainment has been character that so many people were doing at that time and doing better than me. Lenny Beige and Bob Down and Count Arthur Strong. And for some reason I thought, yeah, I'll do one of them as well. But, you know, I did it for quite a while. And, it, you know, I had some sort of take on that character. But, yeah, it's a little bit cringy again. What, another thing?
You weren't... you didn't, because I had a memory that you'd done a show with Ricky, and you weren't in that show with Ricky and Steve, though, were you? That was, you met them through the audition, when you auditioned.
Right? Yeah, although I'd worked with Ricky on the 11 o'clock show, or I'd met him on the 11 o'clock show. But yeah, no, I went and auditioned for The Office.
Yeah. But in Edinburgh, you were doing those shows in Edinburgh. I remember you being up there in the 90s.
Yeah, I did sort of 4 or 5 years doing my show.
And then became successful. I've done 30 years of it. I'm still waiting.
It's brilliant. I love it. And I've missed it since...
You come back.
Nah.
You do Mr. Bagshaw. I'll do the teacher I did in Vista Fun, and we'll do a sort of double act of teachers.
I did this gig... I did Mr. Bagshaw a couple of years ago for... it was a benefit for the Batty Arts Centre, and I got out all my old Mr. Bagshaw material. There was about 10 minutes of it which was usable. The rest of it, because it was all based around that he was a bit of a paedophile. And it was all paedophile innuendo, which back then was hilarious. But, you know, but people don't like it anymore. And,
it's changed.
And so, yeah, it was literally about 10 minutes worth of material that I could use.
Right. Yeah. What's amazing about... You forget, really. I was talking to you about this with Kathy Burke. Is a very similar character to you, I think, in the kind of polymath, but also very likable and down to earth, I think. But also, you've just done so many different things. So you've done proper Hollywood blockbuster movies. You've done loads of theatre. I saw you in Jerusalem, which must have been an amazing thing to be in.
It was. That was profound experience.
Yeah, and so you're managing to traverse all these different areas of show business. How did you find going... So, I mean, you've obviously done quite a few different films. Pirates of the Caribbean, which I've only seen the first one of the Pirates of the Caribbean films. Which
leave it there.
Probably, yeah. I don't want to, you know, I'm just saving them up. I don't want to get through them all too quickly. That must have been... it was an incredibly rapid rise once the Office sort of took off.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, yeah, there was 10 years of doing the stand-up and little bits and pieces on TV, but then The Office came along and opened all the doors. And I think I did the first Pirates in between the first two series of The Office. So I can trace it all back to there, and I've had all these opportunities to do loads of different stuff. Straight after The Office, I think there was a whole string of characters that were very similar to Gareth, very territorial army sort of guys. But I sort of resisted those, and happily so, because I get a variety of work.
Yeah. And when you suddenly are in Pirates of the Caribbean, and you presumably it's quite a different experience than working for the BBC in the... Certainly when the first series of The Office must have been quite a low-budget affair. Is that how did you cope with that change? Did you feel you fitted in amongst all the Hollywood?
Yeah, no, it was very strange to go from... Yeah, I think I've got a feeling the first series of The Office, we took the train to work. You know, we made our own way to work. And then, to be flown out, and suddenly I was on pirate boot camp learning how to... shoot a cannon and stuff. it was weird. But then, you know, I was a very small cog in this massive machine, and that didn't feel very satisfying. Doing The Office, you knew it was a cottage industry. You knew you were making something special. I don't know. It's great. I've had some amazing opportunities.
Yeah. But you didn't do the last, or you left the Pirates of the Caribbean behind. Was that?
Yeah, I did the first three. The first three, and then they've done two more since then,
And was that a deliberate decision? Did you feel that you wanted to move away from...
Yeah, it was. It clashed. I wouldn't have been able to do this most recent Pirates one. They sort of got in touch and asked about my availability, but it would have completely clashed with the second series of Detectorists, which, you know, I write and direct. There was no choice, really. And people imagine when you turn down a Pirates Caribbean movie, you're turning down millions and millions. I didn't turn down millions and millions. I promise you that.
And are you friends with Johnny Depp?
I haven't seen Johnny for years. I'd love to. If I saw him, I think we'd get on all right still, but I don't have his number. I haven't seen him, no.
Did you, Did you fall out over anything?
No. No. No.
You just moved on.
Yeah.
Moved on to other.
And places. I wish he would.
So I'll ask you an emergency question. I've got a new one.
It's nearly fitted in with something I just thought.
I often try these on the podcast. I pause it and see if I can answer.
I'm going to give you some new ones.
Fuck all.
Because this fits in a bit with what you were saying. When was the last time you travelled by coach, like in a bus, like from a bus station, not like a double decker bus, like a coach to get from one city to the next?
I haven't been in a coach for a long time. Long time. I used to go on gigs to gigs on coaches. Yeah. It's probably 20 years. I used to Charlie Cheese. I had a wheel of cheese. That was hilarious. Just a big prop of a wheel that I would spin, get contestants up a game show. And I used to carry this fucking thing all around the country. It was huge. But yeah, I can remember shoving the wheel of cheese into the underside of a National Express. But it was 20 years ago, I think. Yeah.
I was just walked through a bus station in Banbury when I was on tour. And some fans... Just, it brought back, so there was, so when I was 18 or 19 or 20, I travelled everywhere by coach, and bus stations are just very evocative places. They're really horrible.
But yeah, it's depressing, isn't it,
travelling
by
scary.
Coach?
I'm
did like, you ever enjoy it?
Like, no, I never did enjoy it, but like it suddenly all came back, the smells, like there was always weird people sort of hanging around, you felt slightly scared.
Yeah, that feeling of not having much money.
Yeah. I felt glad that I didn't have to travel by coach anymore. No offence to anyone who does. It's worth working hard, is all I'm saying, to escape that. I mean, because, trains are so much better, right? As we're about to find out tonight as I walk home to Hertfordshire. How do you decide when it is time to retire a pair of pants?
Holes, probably.
Yeah, but how big do the holes have to...
Oh, only little, where they start fraying.
The minute it's frayed, they're gone.
Not the minute.
No.
A yellowing?
No. I don't know. I'm trying to get through my old... I've got pants that are like a decade old that I'm trying to get through, and they don't really... They're baggy, but I'm not wearing my newer pants... Because I don't want to spoil my new pants. I want to wear out the old pants. They're not wearing out fast enough.
You should wear them more.
Oh, well,
more
I should. Aggressively. I wear them all day and I sleep in them now. I used to sleep bare, but now I've been married for 6 years. You get your pants on, haven't you, Dave? You know what it's like. Difficult, isn't it, to know when to retire them.
Do you write a date on them when you got them?
No, so, but I know I haven't bought like Calvin Klein boxer shorts since at least before I was married. So at least I've got loads of pairs of those, and they're all at least 6 years old. And I'd say some stretching back 15.
That's great. Makes me feel
good. That's the difference. Once you've been to Hollywood, you can go, "Hey, I've only been wearing these pants 6 years, and I'm going to chuck. They're not even broken. I'm going to chuck them out." That's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, that's me. That's the difference. That's my lifestyle.
I want to go to the book. I'll go to the book. Well, have you ever seen a Bigfoot? Is the question I really wanted to ask you.
No. Have I ever seen a Bigfoot? No.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
I pretended I saw one for quite a few years. For quite a few when I was a teenager. I was staying around, it was a sleepover, friend's house, Vicarage, sort of prime location for a ghost. I think I saw something out the corner of my eye. I looked around, it was nothing. I thought, I might just pretend I saw a ghost. And I kept it out for quite a few years. It was a bloke with a tray, a butler, old butler.
What, did you see him or not?
No, I didn't.
No, okay.
I realise now. I told it so many times, I started to convince myself that perhaps I had seen some ghostly figure, but I didn't.
Well, imagine if it was a butler with a tray. That's quite a bad way to spend eternity, isn't it? He must be annoyed that he died when he was carrying that tray. Thinking, fuck, I'd put the tray down. Just before I died, I wouldn't have to carry it around with me all the time.
That's the lot of the ghost, I'm afraid.
And, well, I was doing a gig in St Albans. I've been to all the places, all the big places. And there was a picture of Morecambe and Wise on the wall in the dressing room that I was in. and it was from 1977, but the dressing room was basically the same dressing room. It's kind of odd to see those people and know that they were, you know, every dressing room we go in must have had all these people in them, but it's kind of odd to see of a lovely little, you know, and they were 50 years old at that time, as I am as well. It's sort of, it was a weird thing. But you live in a house that Peter Sellers once lived in.
Yes.
Is that, do you have that sort of feeling of the baton passing through comedy time?
Oh, I don't know about that, but I do love that. Me and my wife went to see this house and looked around it, decided it was our ideal house that we wanted to live in. And then the bombshell, as we didn't realise at the time, and then they said it used to belong to Peter Sellers. I got to live here. I don't believe in ghosts. I haven't felt his presence or anything, but there's a stain on the floor where I know that some photograph...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Because I spoke to his son, Michael Sellers, and asked if he had any memories of the house, and he said that his dad always had the kitchen converted into a dark room, and there was chemicals everywhere, and there's a particular stain from these dark room chemicals, and there's a beech tree at the end of my garden that he apparently planted in the 50s, and it casts a shadow over all the neighbours' gardens. They all hate it. It's like him pissing off the neighbours from beyond the grave. I like that. But I've never seen him.
No. I wasn't thinking he would literally be haunting you, but that would be
something.
It'd be quite... If you were Peter Sellers and you died and you could come back as a ghost, you would, though, wouldn't you? That's the thing, because you could carry on entertaining people from as a ghost. You could do really funny things as a ghost.
Yeah, but you'd pick other people that you'd come across rather than me in your old house. You'd be Prince... No, I don't know. I was going to say Princess Margaret, but she's...
Can your ghost haunt another ghost? I mean, that is, it's a philosophical question.
Stick it in your book.
You've worked with a lot of people. You've worked with the Muppets...
I never met a single Muppet.
What?
I didn't even see one. I turned up and my scene was with Toby Jones and no Muppets. There was
and
a couple.
No one
of...
didn't, went, the other Muppets didn't even turn up just to see how the filming went.
Nah. But you know, serendipity. That's when I popped the question to Toby Jones about Detectorists.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. So,
if you had to have sex with one of the Muppets,
yeah,
which one would you have sex with?
There was a member of the band. Member of the band with straight blonde hair?
Janice. My choice too.
That's...
Would you like to...
That's who you mentioned.
No, that's Fenella. That's a different one.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to double team Janice if we get the chance?
There's a guy down there, isn't there?
Well...
Okay.
You've got to suspend your disbelief a bit.
One of the chickens are quite nice.
Yeah.
They're quite cute.
And you were with you worked with Al Pacino.
Yes.
In Merchant of Venice.
Yeah, he shouted at me once.
Did he? What?
Yeah,
why?
Properly angrily shouted at me.
What did you do?
We were rehearsing. It was in The Merchant of Venice, a film version of The Merchant of Venice, and we went to New York to rehearse it. And I was playing Lancelot Gobbo, who is Shylock's jester. And so he was doing a scene, and I was being a jester in the back of it, and I was fucking about, as jesters famously do.
Yeah.
In character, though, I was tossing my hat up, and I was sort of juggling with my hat and catching it or whatever. And he just turned around and saw me doing this. He was doing the speech, and then he didn't speak to me, but turned to the other people in the room and said, "What is he doing? What the fuck is he doing? What the heck?" And everyone just went. And so I had to sort of step forward and say, I thought my character would be tossing his hat around. And as soon as he realised that I wasn't actually just fucking about, that I was thinking about what I was doing, it was fine. But for a moment there, it was a horrible... Al Pacino's really fucking angry at me. And, yeah.
That's not what you want. I saw him do... I went to see that film at the BAFTA, and there was a question and answer session afterwards. And I really wanted to ask him, who do you think would win in a fight, Shylock or Scarface? I was too... It's one of the great regrets of my life.
He'd have loved that question. Or he would have shouted at you.
Yeah, it was partly because the first guy who asked the question went, obviously, Al Pacino, you are the greatest film actor of your generation. It was what the guy... You're meant to be asking questions, mate, not giving... Fucking licking the bloke's ass. Just ask your question and move on. And I just thought, yeah, they asked really pretentious questions. And I just thought, but I was with my girlfriend at the time, who was a member of BAFTA, and I thought, you know, I'll get her into trouble if I. You know, who brought the guy who asked whether it's Shylock or Scarf? That's not what we ask at BAFTA. And I judged one of the BAFTA awards once. You're not allowed to talk about it.
What category?
It was Best Entertainment, and Jonathan Ross won. But only because everything was shit. And you've built a buddy. You're quite handy, aren't you? You're artistic.
Yeah,
you're quite handy.
I make stuff. My dad always made stuff. Was able to make anything. You know, yeah.
You made a Buddhist pagoda.
Just a little miniature thing.
Oh,
yeah.
It's going to be like it.
No. We went on holiday, honeymoon to Thailand, and you know, outside the restaurants in Thailand, they have these little miniature shrines.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I made one for my wife.
Not one of those up.
Easy.
Pretty good. You went to art college.
No, I tried to get into art college. I draw pictures, but yeah.
I'm so bad at that kind of stuff. I kind of have a lot of admiration. I just waste my time, you know, playing video games on my phone, not even good ones. And you're out there kind of carving.
Not all the time.
Getting things from your wood.
Yeah.
Okay, finding a nice piece of wood from your wood and
constant.
Taking it home, turning it into a...
Finding what's within it.
Just, I waste a lot of time. Do you feel like you waste a lot of time?
I waste an awful... Yeah, so much time. But you're so prolific. No, I was looking
at... I'm the laziest man in the world.
I know. You, like, produce 3 podcasts a day, don't you?
I know, but it's just all rubbish, bullshit, and Muppet. You've ever had sex with a Muppet? Anyone could do that. It doesn't take any skill, does it?
Yes.
You can ride a tube, which might prove quite useful this evening. You know how to ride a tube. And I saw you talking about it to Jonathan Ross, and you were saying it was easy.
Yeah.
But I was on a tube. This has never happened to me before, but I was on a tube the other day, I think on the way back from this last week, and the guy overshot a little bit, and then you can't go backwards, I don't think.
No, you can't.
So we had to go. He just said, "Oh, sorry. Sorry if you had to get off of Covent Garden. We're going on to the next station."
It's funny.
So it's tricky. How do you learn? How do you stop in the right place?
Well, it was never a problem for me. I did this for a film part. So I did it. I pulled into East Finchley Station 3 times, and it was fine. But then, yeah, I went on Jonathan Ross' show, and I said, "Yeah, you push it forward to go forward. You let go of it to stop, and then there's a button on the." It says windscreen wipers, but I never got to find out what that did. And then, like, 3 years after that interview, I swear, I was standing at a tube station, and it was one of those stops where the drivers change. And I got on and sat there, and I was waiting for a bit, and this driver came up and he went, fucking easy driving a tube, is it? And then he was gone, and I was just like... And for 3 years he's been holding on to that. But he didn't give me a chance to say, yes, mate, it is.
Let me go. I'll show you how easy it is.
Yeah, the thing is...
He went, you can overshoot. Did you know you can overshoot?
And then you can't go back.
You have to go all the way around.
But it's necessarily easy because, you know, fully laden, these trains hold 1,000 people. So, you know, I wasn't... anyway. This guy, it was funny.
That was for a film. That was good. I never saw that film. Three and out.
Yeah.
So the premise of that was if you kill three people in a tube train, you get to retire.
Yeah, that was the.
Is that true?
No, see, that was the urban myth that my character's workmates were saying. So two people fell under his train, and then he decided if I get the third one, I get to retire. So he goes and finds someone who wants to kill themselves. And I thought that was a great premise. It's quite a good sort of single line premise, but I don't know, bad taste maybe.
It's a little bit bad taste, but that's fine. Not going to have a go at that. That's something, you know, I've occasionally had bad taste. There is a figure of you've got your own figure.
Yeah, my Pirates of the Caribbean action figure.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you collected Star Wars figures when you were a kid. Is that true?
I had them. Yeah, I had.
Is it weird seeing yourself as
My greatest day, I think. To see myself in a blister pack.
Have you not got one at home that you play with?
Yeah, there's one. There's one in the team. Yeah, my kids got. I did find myself in a entanglement with Barbie one because I've got a small one,
right.
But then I got a sort of a 6-inch one as well.
Okay.
Action figure. We're still talking about.
I know.
And I found myself in a clinch with Barbie once on the side of the bath.
Right.
And it made me feel really strange. See myself there.
If I had an action figure of myself, I'd get loads of them and just have them all around the house.
Yeah.
I'd pretend I was like a giant who'd gone to like a country where it was all me.
I have seen also the sad sight of a whole rack of my action figures in the shop that they can't shift. No Captain Jack ones, just Rigetti. Oh yes, Rigetti.
I'm sure lots of kids would be delighted to have that toy for free. I'm going to ask another emergency question. I'm in awe. That's the problem. So I'm going to go in. I'm going to go in blind. We'll see how it goes. What is the strangest thing you've ever found in your junk email? You look in your junk?
I get so little spam. I get like an email a day and something in my spam folder once every fortnight.
Okay.
Yeah. So nothing.
Nothing. That's right.
Shit.
This one will work. Yeah. This is going to make.
Cumberbatch and Hiddleston.
Do you have a favourite plate?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it of?
Well, I've got my cereal bowl from when I was a kid.
Bunnykin's
bowl, Mr. Pigley's stores. It's a pig in a store serving some bunny rabbits. Behind him on the shelf is a big rack of ham. And I noticed that when I was 5. I was like, Mummy, where does ham come? That comes from pigs, right?
Yeah,
I don't use it anymore, but...
That's good.
That's a favourite plate, isn't it?
That's nice, yeah. That's good. It's a bowl, technically, but I'm gonna allow it on this. That's the same. That's just the same question about pants, but about mugs. So I'm not gonna. I will ask you: how cracked/broken does a mug have to be before you throw it away?
Yeah, you can hear if you like.
Yeah,
and it's got that goes.
Okay, I keep mine for quite a long time. Like the pants.
Really?
Yeah, they have to be really...
But not on the handle, because then it could fall off.
Well, I find you can still use the ones without the handles for different... I used one for a long time, which didn't have a handle, to measure my porridge milk out with.
Oh, right.
But I had to stop using it because someone I made porridge for came back and said, there's bits of cup in my...
Classy.
I'm not asking you that. A lot of these are just childish, Mackenzie.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
What is the most public place you've ever given or received oral sex? Imagine the one that I turned down. I quite like that. Yes, that was a very adult question compared to what you were saying.
No answer for that one. I'm sorry.
No. Okay. I'll get you. I'll get you eventually. I had Johnny Vegas on the podcast.
He's a lovely man.
He is very nice. And you worked with him on Sex Lives of the Potato Men.
Yes. And again, just recently, actually, last year on a comedy horror. But yeah, Sex Lives of the Potato Men.
What happened with that? Because that got, I think, possibly unfairly chastised, didn't it?
Yeah, it was a brilliant script. It was a really funny script, and that's why everyone got involved. Mark Gatiss and Lucy Davis, and there were some good people in there. And it was a really funny script. Somewhere between the script and it coming out, it became shit. Although, it's not as shit as... I mean, because it made the news. I was on the news. And I remember, you know, my face on that picture behind Moira Stewart's head as they talked about the disgrace that was this film. Because it was lottery funded. And,
right.
But I sort of predicted at the time that it would... It's the cab driver's favourite. I can't get into a cab in London without them mentioning Sex Lives of the Potato Men. So, yeah.
It's interesting, though, isn't it? I think people think, you know, you make choices about what you're going to do, and people think, well, you've chosen this thing, and it turned out not to do that well. But when you're choosing, you don't, you know, you get a script, and it can change, or the casting changes it, or just something like that. You know, it just felt like everyone decided they want to give it a kicking for, you know, without really any reason. I don't think anyone, I don't think that many people actually saw it.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it for years.
But there was the girl from Hunger Games, that actress, you know, that young actress.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yes. She's very popular, and then she did this thing at the BAFTAs where she was cheeky to Joanna Lumley, and it was clearly a joke, and then everyone's gone, oh! When she's done jokes in the past, it's sort of like, oh, isn't she charming? Falling over and she's fun. And then now everyone's sort of having a go at her. It's just like they've decided,
yeah,
we're going to have a go now because we built you up and now we're going to knock you down. You think there's an element of that with any of the... I mean, not that it's like... I'm not saying it was a point where it was as popular and sexy as Jennifer Lawrence and someone took a photo of it without his clothes on and put it on the internet.
Yeah, no, I think it was just a bit shit.
Okay. Well, it's fine. We won't dwell on it then. I wrote a sitcom about archaeologists. It was called Excavating Rita.
It's brilliant.
Yeah. It was a play as well. Couldn't get it on.
No.
No.
It's all gone a bit Stephen Merchant, isn't it?
No, I don't think you're angry with me yet. Britannia.
Yeah.
Now you've had to shave. Your hair's grown back, so it was somewhat. I hope
it was a year ago. Last Christmas.
Is Jez Butterworth as well, is it?
Yes.
You write this. Again, I haven't seen this, but I've seen the makeup you had was fairly extreme.
Yeah.
So you had to have your head shaved.
I shaved my head just because it saved an hour every morning. It was a three and a half, four hour makeup every day to play that character, yeah.
And how long did you, how many, was it a long job or was it?
Well, 30 times I did that.
Right.
Over the, you know, stretched over a few months.
Yeah, but you can see online there's a sort of speeded up version of you getting all the prosthetics put on and everything.
But it was great. I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the character is a sort of the oldest man in the universe or something?
The second man. I think he's the second man. Yeah, he's 10,000 years old and he's sort of the head of the Druids.
And it's all set in Roman times.
It's supposed to be set around the time of the second Roman invasion in AD 43. And yeah, I mean, it takes the truth and chucks it out the window, really. And it's a drama. It's a fiction.
Sure. Oh, yeah, well, you know, you're 10,000 years old.
Yeah, exactly.
That probably wasn't
Don't
true.
Make sense, does it?
it's crazy. But you was you had your head shaved and your daughter didn't like it. And you, yeah. Did you not told your mum about it?
I hadn't told my mum. I was wearing a beanie. And I just, because it was such a thing to shave my head that I thought I told everyone that I'd ever met. And I assumed that I told my mum, but I turned up with a beanie and whipped it off and she yelped and just assumed that I was undergoing some invasive therapy. And yeah, it was a horrible moment.
Yeah. But you've always said you've got good hair.
Thank you very much. So yeah. You have noticed.
Oh, yeah,
that.
that's all I got. It's good. But was that weird? Had you ever been? Had you ever shaved all your head off?
No, but I always thought that I would have to do it at some point. Actors have to do that, yeah. Don't they? And so it was this rite of passage. But it's a strange thing. Have you ever had a shaved head?
Oh, I did when I was at university. I had a skinhead for a play.
Did you? Right.
Yeah, but I decided to do it because I wanted to see what it was like, really. It was quite a small part. I was playing in some little play.
It dominates your life. It's really strange. Well, yeah.
Funny enough, I went to... I had this skinhead, and I went to Pizza Hut in Oxford. I don't know if you ever went there. And you probably
I think
job.
I went to the Pizza Express.
No, I was still going to Pizza Hut at the time, and I was very excited. I went with my flatmate. It was Friday night, and we got stood at the door, and they said came out and said... we've run out of pizza bases.
I remember having to say that. I haven't thought of that for a long time.
Is that what you had to do when you didn't want someone to come in?
Oh, I see. No. Sometimes genuinely you did.
Oh, on a Friday night, it seemed very unlikely to me that they would run out on a Friday night.
I see.
And we went and had curry across the road. And there seem to be people still going into the Pizza Hut. So we've run out of pizza bases. Oh, we love the salad. We're all coming just for the salad. So that's what happened to me when I was bald.
See, my son started touching my head. He found it fascinating to just touch my head, and it became such a sort of second nature thing for him to just come up and touch my head. He found himself behind this kid in his lunch queue at school with a very close-shaved head, and he went up and he's just about to touch this kid's head and he realised what he was doing. But yeah.
Well, good. I will check that. Is it on DVD, Britannia?
It's on Sky, I think, at the moment. Yeah, it's around. Yeah, it's on the internet.
For free?
Probably not. I don't know.
I reckon you can find it. You can find most things on the internet these days. That's what I've discovered.
Not a man who fell in love with a traffic cone, though.
Can you not?
No, I had a look. It's no.
Someone will find it. It's on the dark net.
Yes, it's where it belongs.
We were talking backstage about that kind of the serendipity of getting that part right in the office, and that. And I've talked to this about a few people having given auditions and done auditions. That just it was you were down to like two. There was two people. It was down to
yeah.
And so if you hadn't got it, if the other guy had got it, do you think you would have carried on? Do you think it would? I mean,
think
it's hard
about
to
that
know
all but. The time. Because I can sort of trace it all back to that one job, really. Since The Office, I've not really been out of work for great periods of time, and so yeah, I thought about that a lot. If it came down to this other guy, who I know now, I know the other guy that was up for the part of Gareth. I don't know. Who knows what would have happened? Would I have carried on? Would another lovely lucky break have come along, or would I have? Yeah, I don't know.
It's such a bit, and again, because when I did my last TV thing 10 years ago, there was the main actress part, and it came down to two people, and there was three of us making the decision, so we just went with the one that two of us thought it should be. But you just sort of think and it didn't go on to be a career defining role, but just that kind of the randomness of that decision, where basically any of us would have been happy with either person. It's hard to imagine, because I think you were saying the character of Gareth was going to be more macho and more of an army guy.
That's how I understand they wrote it. They imagined him, as this big bravado macho guy.
Yeah. So, but making that decision could actually have been the thing that made The Office successful. You
right.
I mean? Because if it were in a different character,
sure,
character. Yeah. I know. And joking aside, I think that character is right at the heart of it. Obviously, is Ricky's the big kind of comic turn of it. But the kind of heart of that sitcom is in that little triumvirate in the middle. And Gareth's a very important part of that, isn't he?
Yeah.
And so if they'd gone that other way. Do you watch The American Office and think, how much have I influenced the Dwight character in that?
No, I don't. I've seen probably the first two episodes of that, yeah. And I haven't seen any more. Not because I avoided it or I've got a problem with it, but I never... I did have a problem with it at the beginning.
Right.
I just couldn't understand how this show that we made that I was so proud of, that was so well received, couldn't be understood by Americans, where we, you know, lapped up all of their comedies. Now, of course, I understand that they just took it and made it something different and it ran.
In the end, they did. But, yeah. If you've only watched the first, even if you just watched the first series, I could understand why you would go, why do it? Because they take it and turn it into something different.
Yeah.
But what's interesting again, and it's pretty interesting with Detectress, which you've decided to knock on the head after three series, which is one more than a lot of people decide to go for in the UK. But in the UK, we've got this idea that you do two series and then stop it.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that's what's interesting about the American versions of those sitcoms is that they make them work. And I think The American Office probably works for, you know, seven of the however many seasons it did. Not really the first one, but then it takes off and then it peters out a bit again at the end.
And you watched all of them?
I've watched it all, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah. But I, as a writer, I think, you know, whilst I completely understand why you've stopped the Detectress, and you possibly are correct in doing that for various reasons, I think the characters in it are strong enough to take on and do more and more with them. And what's nice about it is, you know, you could do a whole episode of the Tetris was just the two of you talking on a field and not do anything else, and that would still be a fantastic episode. You know, so you can do so much with it. Do you think there's a lack of ambition amongst English UK produced sitcoms, or do you think that?
I mean, I had to. The decision to do a third series was quite hard because, yeah, there's that thing of, well, I've done two series, they've gone down all right, I'm going to leave it there and not spoil my chances. But I knew there was more that I wanted to do. And just the nature of Detectress, that it's so, nothing much happens. They're looking for stuff. They don't really find stuff very often. I just think that could get boring if I carried it on and on and on. I think there's a finite amount of series that I can do, and that's three I've decided. Just because of the nature of what it's about.
Yeah, maybe, but I mean, this is complimentary because I think it's brilliant. So I do sort of agree with you. I mean, I was saying the thing that actually pissed Stephen off, Merchant off a Village, is why I'm. Is that I think Extras could have gone on for a long time.
Being about the extras.
Stayed as being extras. And maybe with Detectorists, the minute they found a couple of big things, then yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they found a couple of big things, right, in the series. But if they never found anything.
And if I thought about that at the beginning, I honestly never planned for the second series and then for the third. Yeah. And yeah, so.
Well, the first series is very much miss out and don't find anything.
Yeah.
Without giving too much away.
No, they love
everything away. Second series, find something. Third series. And, you know, it's lovely because of the symbolism of things buried beneath the earth, things above the earth. It's very clever and poetic and beautiful. And I think that does make sense to stop it there. But I think, you know, you could. I think those characters are strong enough, you know.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. it is a compliment, but I just can't find it slightly fascinating that, and I think it's because in the UK we write things generally one or two people write them.
Yes.
So it's and I wrote 22 episode sitcom in a year, and it's quite in an English way with me and one or two other people, and that's very difficult. Because in America, they give writers lots of money and have lots of writers, and everyone works very hard on doing those things. But it just feels to me like because John Cleese did two series of Fawlty Towers, that's what's been decided.
I'm sure it all stems back to that. Yeah, that's what you're aiming for.
Yeah. but you know, I think the good UK writers, the good UK sitcom writers, are you know, easily as good as those American ones, and it is a different thing. That six episode series is a is a very different beast than those long, long 22 episodes.
Do you find that frustrating in the shorter series?
I find it frustrating as a writer, I think, and as a viewer a little bit, when you see what can be done. When you see things like, actually, Parks and Recreation, which, again, sort of comes out, is a sort of The Office as well,
right,
and certainly is done by the same people as did The American Office and uses a lot of the same tropes. The first series of that is really bad, and then... But then the rest of them are amazing. So if that show had been made in the UK, it wouldn't have got a second series.
Yeah.
They stuck with them partly because of what their track record, but also they kind of... You find your way through with things, I think, a little bit more by allowing people... And you've done 18 episodes or 19, 20 episodes of Tetris.
19, I think.
So, I mean, that's an American series.
Yes, exactly. One series.
And but then someone's stuck with you to do that. It's like Inside Number 9, which I know sort of you're a fan of as well. But the BBC have stuck with that and let them go get on with it. And it was always good from the start. But this last series that they did was exceptional.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I just think it takes a little while usually for people to find their feet with stuff. And it'd be not, you know, I don't know what you could do about it because. You lose the Britishness of getting 10 people in to write. If 10 people had written the Tetris, it wouldn't be as good. But if you worked really hard, you could write another 20. I'll help you. I've got some. There can be some archaeologists coming. but it's if you haven't seen the Tetris, which I'm assuming you all have, you at home, do watch it. First two series on Netflix. Will the third series be on Netflix as well?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it will be if it's not
and
already.
And it's on BBC. Well, it might not be on BBC iPlayer now, but there's enough to keep you going. I quite like that Netflix. I've caught up on a few things that I've missed out on Netflix.
Yeah.
And gone back to. I watched Plebs. Have you seen that?
No, not seen it.
It's all right.
I don't watch anything. Don't ask me.
Do you not watch things?
I don't. Oh, no. I mean, Game of Thrones, I've not seen an episode.
I find Game of Thrones, I've watched Game of Thrones, I've seen every single episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah?
And I can't remember half of the characters. I can't remember what you did in it.
No,
and I've seen it, I can't remember. And you were in like the third series.
Yeah.
And I was really...
Six episodes.
But I can't remember any of the names of any of the characters, the main characters.
No, don't ask. They asked me to go on the sort of sister show, the one that was broadcast. And I said, no, I'd love to come on, but I couldn't tell you anything about Game of Thrones.
But do you think that's what makes the Detectress so individual and is that you're not influenced by other things? Or I mean, you
really maybe. I mean, I'm not proud of the fact that I don't watch all this stuff.
Well, you should be proud. It's a waste of time.
Yeah, no, it's...
You're making things out of wood and drawing, raising two children. Well, look, it's been absolutely lovely to talk to you. Sorry I've been so useless, but I will forgive myself. And that's what's important. And I'm a huge fan. Please, Kat, I hope you'll write something else.
Yes, absolutely. And
it's an absolute honour to have you on. Ladies and gentlemen, Mackenzie Crooks! You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Mackenzie Crook. The music is by Pess. What else? We do it at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thanks to everyone who lets us do that. We do it through Go Faster Strike. Thanks to all the gang who come up and film it. And to Chris Evans, not that one. We do it via British Comedy Guide. Thanks to Ian British Comedy. And Orange Mark, of course. The producer who I'm indebted to is Ben Walker. It's a Sky Potato Fuzz on GoFasterStrike.com production. Come and see me on tour, richchain.com/gig. Thank you very much. Goodbye. I'm in Canterbury as well, and the week after. I forgot to say at the beginning.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.